Well, good morning, everybody. This is Randy Mays with ILTA, and I have the pleasure today to be speaking with Preston McKenzie. Preston is a vice president at Thomson Reuters, and he is the general manager of Hubbard One. Preston is certainly a visionary in the legal industry, and I appreciate his time this morning. I have a lot of questions I want to ask him about the future of the legal practice as this relates to our Law 2020 initiative. So, Preston, I very much appreciate your time this morning, and I want to dig right into some questions here.
Sounds great.
With our Law 2020 initiative, many at ILTA believe that law firms will undergo some profound changes over the next 10 years. And these changes are going to be driven by a number of factors. Certainly, I think technology will continue to evolve, no question about that. But there are lots of demands now on law firms from the client side. You're probably familiar with the ACC value challenge. And just lots of pressures these days on firms to really change the way they do business. And as a result of that change, we believe that the CIO, the Chief Information Officer in large firms, may have a very different look and feel in the future. Many of our members in ILTA are the chief information officers at their firms or hold some high-ranking leadership position around the firm's technology. And I'm curious, I want to know if you thought about, in a large law firm, what the CIO of the future might look like and what skill sets would be required for a truly successful CIO in a law firm.
Now, I agree, Randy. I do believe that the CIO of the future will be very different than the CIO of the past. And in my role, we're already seeing that in terms of the types of initiatives that the CIOs are undertaking, the level of visibility and engagement between the CIO and the partners at the firm. So I think that future is already starting to take shape now. It wasn't that many years ago that really the CIO's primary role was simply to keep the technology of the firm functioning, right? So from the time and billing system to the email system to the document management system, so long as each of those individual discrete systems was functioning and that the day of the attorneys was relatively uninterrupted by technological challenges, then the CIO was considered to have successfully executed his or her role. I think that is no longer the case. Obviously, a smooth and efficient infrastructure is important, and one that is dependable is important. But just like with the law firms, the stakes for the CIO have been raised, and I'm seeing the CIOs being really challenged across three fronts, and I believe that this will continue to be the case going forward into the future. First of all, CIOs are absolutely being asked by the firms, how can you make our infrastructure more efficient? Meaning firms are now doing, with outsourcing work, with globalization of the partnerships, with the mass of applications that firms have, they are turning to their CIOs and saying, we need to be more efficient with this infrastructure. We need to create more output with the people that we have. We need to get more use out of the applications and the tools that are at our avail, and we need a technological infrastructure and strategy that will help us to do that. So I'm seeing a lot of pressure on that over the last few years as the demand for law firm services has declined, and I think that focus on efficiency of infrastructure will continue. The other thing that I'm seeing is that the CIO is moving from a purely technical role to more of a partner on solving business problems. Here are the problems that we have as a firm. For instance, we don't have the appropriate levels of visibility into the relative performance of certain practice areas, and we need our CIO to partner with finance and the practice leaders in order to make sure that we are tracking, measuring, and monitoring that the performance and efficiencies of those groups. We need to integrate systems in a way that we haven't before in order to drive a better overall client experience. So in the past, these initiatives were more technology oriented, right? Let's upgrade to a new software. Let's move to a faster, more stable platform. Now the end destination is not a technology-oriented solution in and of itself, but it's how will this impact a client, right? Our clients are demanding greater access to information. Our law firm's clients are demanding 24/7 sort of communication and support mechanism. How is technology going to step in and help us as a firm resolve that? In the past, if law firms had a challenge, they could oftentimes throw people at it, right? They were big, profitable, growing enterprises who could afford to invest people at solving, you know, invest in people to solve these problems. Now the ability to invest in people is much diminished, and so they're really relying on technology to solve business problems. So I'm seeing the CIO brought into that role much more. And then the last is, with that, I'm actually seeing the CIO take a more client-facing role, right? Whether it's around areas like electronic discovery or extranets or other ways that the firm or even billing, other ways that the firm's technology is interfacing with their client's technology, I'm seeing CIOs actually have to reach out and dialogue with their counterparts at the law firm client side to discuss technological solutions. And again, this is something that's very different than what would have happened in the past when the technology team was much more back office. And so those are a handful of the really profound changes that I'm seeing. And what that's requiring is a technology leader that probably is able to do a few things. First of all, he or she has got to have a higher level of business acumen than they had in the past, meaning a real understanding of how the firm makes money and how the client values the services of the firm, so that CIO can make sure that the investments and the skill sets and the infrastructure of technology that is being built in the firm supports those types of initiatives and supports the business results for the firm and the client satisfaction. The other thing that I'm seeing is the need for the technology leader of the future to be much more willing to leverage advancements in the technology space as a result of feeling that, you know, they're less constrained to things that they can build themselves or things that are specifically built for the legal space. And I think that the smart CIO of the future is able to look across the technology continuum and identify advancements that are applicable to law firms, and even if they're not specifically designed with law firms in mind, and be able to bring that technology in-house and use it to complement the skills of his or her own staff as well as the legal-specific types of applications that are out there. And I'm seeing that, you know, today with SharePoint, but it'll be a number of other technologies in the future that drive that. So that's how I'm seeing the role change and some of the skill sets that I believe that a successful CIO will need in order to effectively adapt to that role change in the future.
Okay. Well, thank you, Preston. And I think you've hit on a number of key concepts there. Certainly this person that you've described will have to be very business savvy, as you've pointed out. I liked your comment about a more client-facing role. Clearly someone who's good at relationship building would need to be in the CIO position. And, of course, the bottom line on all of this is improved client service. Now, let's kind of seg into, I had mentioned the ACC value challenge as I framed the first question for you. And a part of that ACC value challenge, as you're well aware, is a very strong request for alternative fee arrangements, something that's different from the long entrenched billable hour. But I want to go broader with my question to you. I really think the next 10 years we'll see several kinds of, quote, alternatives float to the top. And I'd like you to speak to what I'm calling the coming tide of alternatives. So this would be not only alternative fee arrangements, but perhaps alternative staffing models, alternative officing models. And by that I mean a move toward a more virtual practice. Love to hear your comments around that.
I think, Randy, you're right. This is one of these glimpses of the future that we're actually starting to see today. So the roots of the future are taking place in the fact that corporate counsel are absolutely changing the way that they buy legal services. They're changing their risk profile. It was a time then firms had a much higher aversion to legal risk than to financial risk because the the threat of financial risk was deemed to be less imminent. That's clearly not the case now, and firms are willing to take on more legal risk in order to, as a way to mitigate the financial risk of actually engaging in high cost legal activities. And this can be seen in the decrease in the litigation that's occurring, typically in periods like this where corporate activity is down, litigation has gone up. It's not done that this time, and I think that's directly as a result of the way that firms are willing to take on more legal risk and reduce sort of the litigation. We're seeing decreases in some areas in the patent world, even patent litigation. So this is all pointing to the fact that firms have decreased demand, and for the demand they do have, they are absolutely wanting to ensure that they are not paying for inefficiencies, training of staff members, and then there's no misalignment between the work created and the cost of that work. And so that is the foundation for all of this change. And what that's forcing law firms to do is a couple of things. First of all, it's forcing them to look at the changes in their staffing structure. So a traditional large law firm looked like a pyramid, right, with a lot of associates at the bottom, and then as you moved up toward the partner ranking, the smaller and smaller partner numbers at the top, and that pyramid supported the value proposition that the firms deliver to their corporate clients. What we're now seeing, and I've heard others talk about this, is more of a diamond, right, with a smaller group of lesser trained staff at the bottom, a large and flexible group of moderately trained or highly specialized attorneys in the middle, and then a smaller group of firm partners and managers. And that's creating a view of firms to think about, what is it that at our core clients value from us the most? What are those things that they are going to come to us and they will gladly pay a premium rate for, because the client knows that we will do that better than anyone else, or certainly at least as well as anyone else, and it's worth it for the firm, for the client, to pay for that. For the other things, then the firms are saying, if it's anything outside of that sort of sphere of competence, we need to look at seriously, are we over-investing in areas that are outside of that core? And that could be practice areas, that could be functional activities, right? That can be any number of things. And so in areas where firms believe, hey, this is either a commodity type of activity that we have to do but is not highly valued, or it's a commodity activity and we need to exit from that, they're taking action. They're either outsourcing that to partner firms. I'm seeing firms, you know, follow sort of the Oric model. When Oric moved their back office from San Francisco to West Virginia, firms are now doing similar things, and sometimes it's to lower cost places in the United States, and at other times it's in places like the Philippines and India, because these firms are smartly thinking that we need to focus our high cost resources, right, which is downtown offices and highly trained and well paid attorneys, only in those areas where clients really view us as offering a differentiated and unique and high-value solution. In other areas, we either have to exit, and you've seen firms do that, or we have to lower our cost. And what's interesting about this whole phenomenon is everyone understands that at the broader level, but there's still a lot of disagreement as to what that will really mean and what that impact will actually be. Even when you talk about alternative fees, many firms will say that they get a lot of discussion of RFP of alternative fees in their RFPs, but oftentimes it just simply works back to a discount on the billable hour. So I think there's two lines of thinking, which is how extreme will this be? It's definitely occurring, but will it be a fundamental shift, and the billable hour will see a big decline, and then that will change the entire structure of the firm around it? Or will there simply just be more pressure against the cost per project, which will force firms to reduce their investment in some of their non-core and less profitable areas and increase investment in some capabilities that they haven't had in the past, like project management, operational and organizational effectiveness, and the like, where the focus is really on driving these types of projects in a more efficient way?
Interesting, Preston, and I think you kind of circled back to something you said earlier about, the need for business-savvy leadership. I think with a lot of these alternatives that you're talking about, the leadership of the firm is going to have to be very conscious of their pricing models and how they drive profitability on any change in fees, staffing, outsourcing, whatever they're doing around that. So excellent comments from you.
And Randy, if I might make one additional comment on that, I think if you think then what is the role of the CIO to help his or her firm's leadership do that? No, the confidence to make difficult decisions comes from having good data. And I think that one of the things that firms struggle with is they've got so much data and so many disparate systems and so many ways of looking at it. I think the savvy CIO of the future will be able to partner with his or her colleagues in the finance department, in the marketing and business development department, and with the executive committee on really creating views of what's occurring at the firm, in practice areas, and in with specific clients to provide the type of information that will help leadership make what will be an increasingly difficult set of decisions.
Okay. I think you described the business of the law practice of the future very, very well. Another comment I want to get from you, or comments I want to get from you, is around the concept of transparency. It's another term that I hear, law firms, their clients are making more demands for them to be transparent in how they're handling legal matters so that when the billing situation occurs, everyone is clear on why things are billed the way they are. The ultimate goal, obviously, for the client to perceive value in that arrangement. You have any comments around transparency and how firms can do a better job in that area?
I do, Randy. I think that this phenomenon of transparency is being driven by something that you're really seeing in society at large. I think that the suddenness and the severity of the downturn in 2008, and I think more importantly, people's shock at how interconnected they were, right? How is it that a manufacturing employee in Pennsylvania is impacted so dramatically by, too much real estate being built in Florida, Arizona, and California? I think people were really shocked by that. And the ultimate outcome, frankly, is a level of distrust, broadly speaking, sort of at the institutional level. People certainly don't have the same level of trust in banks or the financial system that they once had. They certainly don't have the level of trust in the corporate world, as evidenced by the outrage at some of the things that have occurred from boards at the automotive manufacturers to the insurance companies to the banks. And frankly, I think that they have a lack of trust in government, even though there's a lot of work that the government's doing to try to correct the issue. I think that there's the feeling that whether it's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or the SEC and the regulatory committees, there's a general lack of kind of trust that was created in this 2008 and 2009 downturn. And there's only one way to regain trust, and that is by doing things. And the only way that you can show that you're doing things is by have people actually see that. And so see that the work that's being done and have an open view into what you're doing. And whether it's the healthcare reform or the regulatory reform being considered for banks or business-to-business types of relationships or client-to-firm relationships, I think the transparency is absolutely key because there's a general mistrust about the way the old system, the old banking system, the old legal system, the old system of regulation. And I find that really interesting, and we're seeing that in all walks of life. So for firms to regain the trust that they have with their key clients after years and years of increased rates or increased fees and ultimately still trouble for their clients, they're going to have to be more transparent. And again, I think there's a clear role for the CIO to do that, because if you think about a typical large law firm with 500 to 2,000 plus attorneys, working with a portfolio of hundreds, maybe even thousands of large and complicated clients, you can't just sort of tell people to talk more and to be more open. You really have to create systems and protocols and processes that make it easier for clients to reach in and have more transparency into firms. And I'm seeing that occur for instance, with the explosion of extranets, where firms are building secure environments where they can share all types of information with their clients, both value-add information like thought leadership with the firm, with the client around certain areas of practice or around certain areas of the law of interest to that client. Two, as you alluded to, Randy, very transparent and open billing systems that provide a level of detail and a level of predictability and reliability and fairness that perhaps clients thought had been lost in the years leading up to 2008 and 2009. So I think that it's with open, regular, and candid conversation that we regain the trust, and transparency is the way to do that. And it requires technology to have transparency at the macro level across big and complex firms. So I think that this is something that firms are working with. You know, many firms have a culture where it's difficult to even be transparent internally. And I think that that next generation of leadership is understanding that that thinking probably had a place, but is not in the ethos or the zeitgeist of the current environment, that it's going to be being open with partners, being open with associates, and then in turn putting in place the mechanisms to allow them to be open and transparent with clients, even if the news is not all good. That's going to engender the type of trust that will allow firms to get back to, you know, leveraging those valued relationships for premium types of price for premium work that they deliver.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I love your comments about the new generation of leadership. I think all of these changes that we're talking about are profound in and of themselves, and you sort of lay on top of that the fact that over time, a new generation of leadership will come into play. Multiple new generations of lawyers will move into the space. Preston, in many of my conversations with other folks, you know, we talk about how tough it's going to be to be a lawyer in the future, quite frankly. Not that it's ever been easy, but I think a new set of instructions are in place now. And I've asked a few folks about law schools. You know, what are law schools doing to prepare attorneys for this change? And what I'm hearing is absolutely nothing. So that may be the next wave of profound change that we see is in how law schools train young attorneys. And I'd like to kind of personalize this a little bit, because I do worry about the lawyers, you know, the new lawyers just coming into the legal practice and what that world looks like for them. So I want to personalize this a little bit and just ask you, you know, if your son or daughter is looking at a career as a lawyer and they're graduating from law school in the year 2020, what is the best advice that you can give him or her today?
Well, I think, first of all, I happen to be bullish on the profession. I actually would. I have three daughters. They're about the right age to be graduating from law school in 2020. My middle one certainly is an effective arguer, so she might have a fine career ahead of her as a litigator. But I'm actually quite bullish on the profession of attorney in the future, because attorneys help their clients deal with complexity, uncertainty, and change. And frankly, there's more of that today than there was 10 years ago, and there will be more of that in 2020 than there is today. So I think that the concerns over the profession itself are probably not as I don't share that opinion. Now, I do believe that the profession is changing rapidly, and that someone who is married to the way that it works today, which is to go in, get great grades at a top school, then go to a large firm, basically give that firm 7 years of your life and pop out on the other end as a well-rewarded and highly regarded partner, I think that part of it of the equation has changed. And for people that hold on to that as the way that I become a successful lawyer or move to a government agency or do these types of things, even the in-house attorneys are seeing dramatic change in their jobs. And so I think people that are sort of wedded to those ideas will find the profession much different and most likely much less rewarding than they had anticipated. If I were offering advice to my own child, if they're interested in being attorney, I would encourage them to do so. But I would say that two things that you need to think about that perhaps your colleagues who graduated in the year 2008 were not thinking about as much, and certainly the colleagues that graduated in 1988 weren't thinking about as much, were be sure that you have these two attributes. First of all, have a global mindset. The real challenges of 2020 and beyond are going to be how do we integrate a global economy when there, many of the key players in that global economy don't even have a local rule of law that is anywhere approaching the level of sophistication that you see in Europe and the UK and the US. How do we actually do that? And how do companies make investments? And how does business actually is business transaction across the globe with such a disparate set of laws, regulations, cultural ethos, and the like? And people that understand the global concept and can help companies navigate that question will do very, very well. The second is be entrepreneurial, right? Ultimately, it's really all about managing your personal brand and your personal portfolio more than it is about attaching yourself to the right employer coming out of school. I think in 2020, you know, the technology is opening it up in a way that talented people can thrive in almost any environment. So make sure you put your focus on developing yourself, developing your brand, and being flexible to executing and leveraging your talents in whichever environment best suits you and best suits your clients. So that's what I would talk to my daughters about if in a couple of years as they head to college they decide that the legal profession is the one that they would like to pursue.
Well, those are fabulous comments, Preston, and I have to say your daughters are lucky to have your advice around that. And I think our membership is very fortunate to benefit from your comments around all of this. So I very much appreciate your time today. Your comments, again, will be most helpful as we look ahead to 10 years and the changing law firm. So I thank you very much.
Thank you, Randy.